Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL Podcast with Dan Hansis and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.
Swinging a high drive into center field. Hits at the wall. It is gone. Cassis does it again. It's gone. It's into the bullpen. This game is tied.
And he swings and rips one to center field. It's high. It's deep. It's back. It's gone. Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Strike three. It's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
All right, let's go. Welcome back, Play Tessie, episode 322.
We're laughing because Gordo, we're already off the rails. Gordo arrives to this recording, and he's wearing a button-down. He looks like a priest.
He looks like he has his own baptism after we end this recording.
We got to get back on YouTube so people can see this different outfit from you. I'm used to like a Red Sox t-shirt or your Patriots jersey.
I'm used to the Sims character black t-shirt.
I get on here and they're like, I'm the last one on and they're like mid-sentence and I get on and it just stops and it's like, oh, like Father Gordon on the podcast.
You look like you found God. But anyway, sorry to interrupt the intro. I feel like I had to address why we were already losing our minds 90 seconds in.
All right. Intro. Here we go. Episode 322 of Play Tessie. Remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Rate 5 stars. Find us on the socials at Play Tessie on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Sammy's here. Pat's here. Father Gordon blessing you guys with his presence.
Wow.
You have a raccoon on your hat, and it's me. I'm the one with the outfit.
What? My raccoon hat looks good. I get compliments on this.
What is the raccoon for?
It's an artist from Portland, Maine, and she makes like animals holding things. So this is a raccoon holding a PBR beer can.
Oh.
Ah.
Yeah, look at that. Yeah, I can see it now. It looked like it was just holding the horizontal blue thing. You couldn't see the up and down part of the can. It looked like it was part of the raccoon's body.
PBR. Anyone who's been to any sort of rock and roll concert has crushed many underwhelming PBRs.
You know what annoys me?
No.
Every week for the Sunday pod. Oh, honestly, every time we record this pod, we're always recording it at night, and it allows us, like, anything that happens during the day, like, happens, and we have the ability to talk about it at night. We like almost never record at like noon or something, and then things could happen at night, and it makes whatever we talked about during the day like irrelevant. And on Sunday, due to schedules, we needed to do that. We needed to record in the afternoon for like the first time, and almost never does it bite us in the ass to do that. But the one time that a member of Red Sox ownership wants to speak, it was late in the day on a day we recorded in the afternoon. And we got to talk about the important stuff. We got to talk about Sam Kennedy. But the fact that Tom Werner talked and it happened late, the one time that we recorded in the afternoon, is crazy.
Speaking Tom, yeah, good thing those Sam Kennedy quotes were relevant and elicited emotion from the fan base. Otherwise, I would have been really bummed out. But yeah, the timing wasn't great on that. I released a little standalone video on my O&O social media, but not getting to talk about it on the podcast. I'm glad we're touching on it early here because those comments, those Tom Werner comments were, I thought they were kind of funny.
What is O&O?
Owned and operated?
Yeah, O&O.
Oh, okay. God, that's some business terminology right there.
Corporate.
Well, it was funny because it was like a half hour after we stopped recording, the quotes from Tom Werner came out.
Brutal.
And I think it was me. I think I said the group chat, God fucking damn it, Tom Werner just spoke. And Sammy was like, yeah, no, we just talked about it. And then Gordo was the one who was like, no. Like, he just wrapped media and talked directly about Rafael Devers. We're like, God fucking damn it, dude.
All right, let's give the quotes just in case people missed it. There were a couple. And I'll start with the first one about Devers, and this was in the Boston Globe. Werner said, quote, I don't like to speak ill of any player. I'd like to say that he's a wonderful person. But of course, when we had an injury at first base, his unwillingness to play that position was extremely discouraging. Then the article says, Henry flew to Kansas City on May 9 to personally ask Devers to play first base. He was rebuffed, and Devers was traded on June 8. The Sox have since traded away three of the four players they received in return for Betts. I'm sure that meant Devers. Quote, it was a discouraging episode. Just pick up a glove. And I'll give the Bregman. Actually, I don't have the Bregman stuff fully quoted here. I'll pull that up. I only texted myself the back half of that.
We can just start with this one. That's a good place to start.
Yeah. Did you guys like the instant reaction I saw on Twitter about the Warner quotes was people getting pissed? And like my natural reaction when I hear any of these guys speak on the Devers trade or the Betts trade or anything, which they rarely do, but my natural reaction is to get annoyed. But I looked at what was said, and I'm sorry, there's nothing to be annoyed about. Like, I asked these guys to speak. I want ownership to speak. When they make decisions, I want to peel back the layers. I want to know why they made those decisions. And I want to know how they're feeling. And the truth is, he told us how he was feeling. He didn't defend what they did or how it got to that point. He just said it was disappointing that Devers didn't play first base. Which, if I'm thinking about what they, I want them to be disappointed. I was disappointed that he didn't play first base.
Right, and we keep talking about the home run shortage that we're all anticipating for this 2026 team. I would be much happier if Rafael Devers was still on the Red Sox. Breaking news. But Gordo, you said it right there. Is Tom Warner said how he felt. He only said his side of the story, which is why people got upset with the quote. And I don't think he's expected to go in depth on this and tell Rafi's side and hypothesize on why Rafi felt the way he did. But I agree with you, Gordo. I don't have any problem with what Tom Warner said. The way I view it, at least this is this portion of the situation. I think the Red Sox botched the communication and they deserve half the blame themselves. So get that part out of the way. But from what Tom Werner was talking about, I understand Rafael Devers was told, you're going to be the third baseman. Bregman's going to play second base. And then Bregman went over to third base. And that's poor communication. We all agree. But when Casas got hurt and they asked Rafael Devers to play first base, by far the best option to go over there, even if he's not a good defender, just to keep him in the lineup every day and keep DH as a rotation because you don't have Casas. There's no defending not playing first base, not picking up a glove, as Tom Werner said, and stepping in for your injured teammate. The Red Sox, again, they botched the communication. I will never stand up for how the Red Sox handled that situation. But when a guy gets hurt, you learn this in Little League. Go pick up a glove and play first base if that's what the coach is asking you to. Especially when you're getting paid $300 million. I'm sorry. You have an obligation to the team to step in when someone gets hurt. You are by far the highest paid guy on the team. That comes with the territory. So I won't stick on this too long because all the people keep saying, I'm sick of hearing about this story, but we got to talk about it when ownership brings it up. It should be so simple. Red Sox botched the communication. Devers acted like a child. They're both in the wrong. But the one thing we all agree on, and I don't think there's a single person who should disagree with this, never should have been traded. Rafael Devers never should have been moved. Like I've said before, this is the same ownership group that dealt with Manny Ramirez doing much worse. I don't understand it. I don't know what John Henry said to him in Kansas City. No, he asked him to play first base. There's no way it's that simple. But to put a bow on it, everyone deserves blame. And everyone wants to pick a side. It's both sides. They both deserve blame. You can allocate more blame to one side or the other. I don't care. Everyone deserves blame. Devers never should have been traded. End of story. Gordo?
See, this is why people get mad about what he said, is because it reopens the wound and it like we would not otherwise be talking about it on this podcast, and now we are. And I understand that.
But want to.
We ask these guys to be honest. They don't speak. Now they spoke. Like that's the thing, is I would rather they speak and be honest about their position than just say the right thing so that something doesn't become a story. Pat?
You kind of just started to what I was gonna say is I'm going to do something that I very rarely do, if ever, on this podcast, and that is praise ownership. He was asked about it, and for the first time in God knows how long, we got a forward-facing, honest, human answer from a member of ownership. He was just like, yeah, it really sucked when he did not, you know, sack up and play first base when the team needed it. We paid him to be the franchise player. He wouldn't do it. We flew down and asked him. He said no. Like, you can go back and forth about the actual act of trading Rafael Devers all day. But when it comes down to ownership being front-facing, this is what we're looking for. Whether we like the answer or not, you want to say, yeah, like, I want to say we enjoyed our time with him and he's a good guy and we wish things worked out differently. But he didn't do what a face of the franchise does, and our hand was forced. And I appreciate that. I truly do.
One thing I don't understand is there's a section of the fan base who frames Rafael Devers as this, you know, relatable victim. He was told to put his glove away, is the quote that they always reference. Put his glove away. Then an injury happens. Like, they're trying to say, how could you expect Rafael Devers, after being told he's not going to play the field, to then go play the field? And that is supposed to be some sympathetic kind of tale of woe. Like, oh, he was told one thing and then the other. That happens all the time in life. That happens all the time in the work world, in the personal life. Sometimes you have to adjust. And sometimes people are bad communicators. And no, again, not standing up for the Red Sox. They botched it. They botched the communication. But to act like Devers having to go from DH to first base is this awful thing. Again, while he's being paid $30 million a year, that's relevant, like it or not. I know there's people probably listening being like, oh, stop bringing up the money. He's still a person. He is still a person, but he's a person who's getting paid an exorbitant amount to play baseball. It's like we're burying the lead. It's a baseball game. He's paid to play baseball. He's not going down in the mines for 17 hours a day, getting covered in coal to make like $17 an hour. This guy's getting paid unbelievably well. And like I said earlier, it comes with the territory. When you're paid like a franchise player, you have to act like a franchise player, whether your ownership group is a bunch of idiots or not.
I 100% agree with everything you're saying. I think you're giving a heavy dose of the Red Sox point of view when, let's be real, and you said it earlier, like, I know you agree with this, but like, you could give just as much about the Devers point of view about how the Red Sox botched the communication, about how he asked them in the offseason, is my position say all that. We could go into that, and we talk about it over and over and over again, and we have on this show. I want to keep it on the ownership level and talk about them speaking, because I feel like a lot of fans, they beg, like, I see tweets, John Henry hasn't spoken to the media since they traded Mookie Betts. I think like recently was the 6-year anniversary.
Today as we record. Today? Here, I'll get you today. I can get you the exact number. Today is the 2,192nd consecutive day that John Henry has not spoken to the media. And that's not counting, 2023 winter weekend where he had like a town hall for 15 minutes and then called off. That wasn't open media. That was like a select few questions. We also saw them. This is probably
they
not
vetted
public.
It.
They totally vetted it. We saw them doing it in front of the stage. So that does not count, is my point.
No, you're right, Sammy. Because yeah, he spoke publicly, but it was questions from a moderator and from fans.
Robinson TC. They did a good job, but they're not. Yeah. And people will get on Jared and TC. One, you ask the hard questions. You're not going to ask hard questions.
They kind of did, though.
They went as hard as they could, but you can only do so much in a town hall format at winter weekend. That's not the time nor the place. So just because people are going to get on us for saying, like, he hasn't spoken, it doesn't count.
Right. And yeah, he hasn't had a press conference since then. And people beg over and over and over again, like, they need to speak. They need to speak. We need to hold them accountable. They need to speak and be held accountable. So you can't, and I understand it wasn't like an open press conference that Tom Werner spoke at, but you can't ask ownership to speak. And then when they give you their perspective on things, and understood there's two sides to every story, but if they're going to give you a fair synopsis, like a fair perspective, you can't get mad at them for that when you were previously asking them to speak.
Well, I mean, like, you can still get mad at them. You can't get mad at them for speaking. You can't be like, why would you say that?
Okay,
like,
let me amend this. You can't get mad at them. Pat, you're muted.
How awkward. You can't get mad at them for an honest answer. if that's exactly what it is. You cannot get mad at an honest answer. You
and
can
fair.
Get mad
and fair.
Yeah, disagree with exactly. it. Yeah.
Yeah. You can get mad at Sam for these like PR kind of non-answer like that. Yeah. You can get mad at that 100%. If there is someone forward facing to the media from ownership plus like, you know, Sam, Craig, whoever else, and they give you a fully transparent, honest answer, you have the right to disagree with it. You cannot be mad at it.
Yeah, yeah, that's a great way to put it. Like you can relitigate the Devers thing, and I understand there's people who are going to say that, well, he's not doing what's best for the team because what's best for the team is for the attention to be on the team moving forward, not Devers in the past, not Bregman in the past. I get that, but we ask the overwhelming majority of the fan base wants these people to be held accountable and to speak. So,
or just don't talk at all. I'm cool with that. Just don't say anything. Never speak.
Okay. What would you rather, Sammy? Would you rather Tom Werner or John Henry or whatever give answers like this that are fair, but it gets us talking about this as opposed to what position Caleb Durbin's going to play? Or would you rather they say nothing at all? Because to me, it's an easy answer. I want these guys to speak.
In between, I would like John Henry to speak like once a year at a set time right before the season. Like a long media session, like 30 minutes where media can ask him whatever he want or whatever they want. And then that would be, I don't need to hear anything else for the rest of the year. Something big happens. Like if there's a big blockbuster trade, I want to hear a little comment, but things that are kind of like recurring, like a traditional, like, all right, here's John Henry's. That's what I would like. Nothing else.
So you want him to speak then? That's the answer. Then you want him to speak. I'm not saying you want him to be like a Steve Cohen where he's talking all the time,
right?
But I'm saying like, the fans do, in my opinion, because some people do think that these guys should just keep their mouths shut. And every time they open their mouths, they make things worse. And that goes for Sam Kennedy, John Henry, Tom Werner. To me, I think the fans deserve to hear from these guys.
It's not that I want them to speak. I want them to respond. When they're asked a question, they should have the media should have the opportunity to ask them questions. I don't need Sam Kennedy's State of the Union telling us this, this, and that. Like, I just want John Henry specifically. Because he's the main guy. He's the guy pulling all the strings. He should have to answer to the media. So I guess that's kind of my in-between way. I don't want them to speak. I want them to respond when spoken to.
Here's what Devers was asked about this at Giants camp today. And this is what Tom Werner, or not what he could have said, but he could have taken this approach and we wouldn't be talking about it right now. You tell me if you would have rather Tom Werner said something like what Rafi said. Rafi said, that's in the past. I don't want to talk about it. It's over. I don't have any opinions on what he said, referring to Tom Werner. So let's concentrate here and just leave the past in the past. Would you have rather Tom Werner said something like that when Pete Abe asks him that the question about Devers? Because to me, I want to hear Devers' side of the story. I want to hear ownership side of the story. I want to hear Breslow's side of it. I want to hear Cora's side of it. I want to know what's happening. Like, yeah, sports is what happens on the field, but it's also the soap opera that happens off the field. That's important too.
I agree. Well, I do a podcast with you guys about the Red Sox, so I would rather the comment. That's good content. But if I didn't have the podcast, as long as the answer is honest, I think I would prefer that. The thing that really bugs me is like what we spoke about last episode.
Lies.
Sam Kennedy talking. Not just lies, but how do I put this? Confident, cocky, skirting around what's actually happening and acting as if, oh, I can get away with this. Nothing's going to happen. That's what really pisses me off. And that's what it felt like Sam Kennedy did when he was talking about Alex Bregman. He would have been here if he wanted to be here. That's the kind of shit that pisses me off. The honest answers, you know, I can only get so upset if they're actually telling the truth.
I just think it's incredibly funny that all of a sudden Rafael Devers is PR trained. Like last year, they asked about Bregman. I play turd. Like that's all he said for 5 minutes. And then today he's like, yeah, that's in the past. It's how we both grow, mature. We leave that in the past. I'm like, where did this come from?
He did talk like this after the trade. Like people remember the Sox visited San Francisco like a week after they traded him there. The media's there. They're all asking him questions and he didn't touch anything since the trade. Agreed, Pat. He had that weird media session in spring training and then he had the weird – what was it, following like a Rangers series where he talked a bunch of crap and then they go to Kansas City. John Henry flies down there. He refuses to talk after that.
Yeah.
That was all Yeah, that was different. Clearly, like, he was trying to send a message with those. And now he's gone and there's no message that needs to be sent. He's a San Francisco Giant.
Imagine if he just bitched all year and the Red Sox just put up with it, and then they just went into 2026 with Rafael Devers. It probably would have been smoothed over at this point, and we'd feel great. Imagine how good we'd feel about the Red Sox right now with Devers in that DH spot. Probably would have moved Duran for another asset that the team needs.
Dude, by now, honestly, Devers probably is playing first base, and they don't trade for Wilson Contreras.
Yeah, so keep Duran. Yeah, either way.
There's one, like, butterfly effect thing here, and it is Tristan blowing his knee out. If Tristan never gets hurt, Rafael Devers is still at Red Sox. I'm not blaming Tristan, obviously, but, like, the chain reaction from that.
What would have happened there? Because obviously things weren't good, but that sped it up. Like, could they have held it? Could they have held it back, like, push back against it, and then September and October go by, and they use the offseason to smooth things over?
It was over. I thought it was over. I remember when he got traded. I was thinking, or when the John Henry go down to Kansas City, whatever the order was, I remember thinking, what the hell? I thought this was over. I thought Devers was cool with DH now. He was hitting well. He had adjusted. Remember last year how slow he started and everyone was saying, oh my God, can he DH? I remember all these people texting me and I was like, I will eat my arm if Rafael Devers doesn't remember how to hit. There's no shot. I thought it was over. And it's funny you bring that up, Pat. I literally last night, I was laying in bed thinking, I wonder if the person who physically manufactured that base is aware that, like, I made a base that kind of changed the course of baseball history.
Because I made Rafael Devers a giant.
Yeah. It's a butterfly effect. You make the base gets put into Fenway Park, Casas breaks his knee on the friggin' base, then Casas hurt and blah, blah, blah. And crazy butterfly effect.
Tristan just falls by first, and you see the guy who raked the field earlier just, oh, fuck.
Wait, I want to see where they're made. They're made in Costa Rica. There's a guy in Costa Rica who changed Red Sox history.
I just remember leading up to that Casas injury. I was so – because Casas had started very slow. Like, you look at his stats for last year, they were really bad. Yeah. And I was so – because he was going to break out of that. Like, he was going to. And I was so – because people were being such pricks about the whole thing. And I was so excited to dunk on every single one of them. And the fact that, A, that didn't get to happen because he went down, and B, it directly led to the Rafael Devers era ending in Boston. And people will say, oh, well, they thought that contract was underwater. They were gonna dump that contract at some point. Maybe, but – maybe no. They would have seen this offseason that they severely lack power on this team and thought, well, you know, we could use a profile like Rafael Devers on this team and actually, you know, appreciate the star talent that you got when you got it.
I don't agree with that they would have dumped the contract. When do they extend guys and then dump them? They dump guys pre-extension.
The theory is that they extended him because they were forced to, because they traded Mookie, they let Xander go, the fans were pissed, they had to throw the fans a bone, they extended Rafi for them, but then realized, well, this is a DH-only guy, and we're paying a DH $300 million.
Yeah, I get
like, that's what they leaked that they thought the contract was underwater after the trade, and people are kind of connecting the dots with that.
Dude, they can't dump Yoshida. Why do we think they would have... Well, I don't know. I don't think they would have dumped...
Devers is way better than Yoshida.
No, I know, but he makes so much more money. And, like, he's actually helping the team.
He's a star hitter. Like, I understood. But
there's
also
multiple ways you
can
go about
play
it,
the
yeah.
field. Like, yeah. Yoshida, you legitimately cannot put in the field. Devers, you could put it. Yoshida, you cannot put in the field.
You can put him in the field once every five games in left field. He's a left fielder. Who cares? At Fenway?
Well, first off, if you're trading him, he's not at Fenway. Second off, I think even at Fenway. Pretty bad. I think Yoshida is to the level where you cannot put him in the field unless it's an emergency, whereas Devers, you can play him at first. He was pretty okay at first last year. And at third, I mean, at this point now he hasn't played there in a year, so I don't know. But like at this point last year, you could have played
much
him at third.
Worse.
Pat?
I see Masataka Yoshida, the left fielder, as much as I did Christian Vasquez, the second baseman at this point. Like, that is a breaking case. No. Christian Vasquez. Christian Vasquez.
Oh.
You guys not remembering this?
I thought that was a mistake.
No.
No, I do. Guys... I do, but I...
I'm not sure I remember this.
Christian Vasquez started the game at second base.
Wow. I mean, I know Connor Wong.
2021, maybe?
I'll pull it up.
Pull it up. But yeah, that's me and Masataka Yoshida with left field right now. Which
he's not that bad. Oh my, no, he's not. Bad. It's not like unplayable.
But he's going to be out there every single day for Japan and the WBC. So we shall see.
Is he going to start? Do we know he is starting?
Yes, he is. They announced the outfield lineup. It is Yoshida in left field, Seiya Suzuki in center field, and Kondo in right
Kosuke
field.
Kosuke Kondo, right?
Yeah, who was very good last WBC. But yeah. Yep. But yeah, Christian Vasquez, the second baseman.
The Recap Show is an unfiltered inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports and all things culture. From two U.S. Women's National Team World Cup champions and Olympians, follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
That's crazy. The Sox posted a picture of Caleb Durbin on their Instagram today. It's like a side view of him. I think he was like holding a bat or something. And I was like, by God, that looks like Christian Vasquez. I'm trying to find it.
Okay, so Christian Vasquez, I got the numbers up. He played second base in 2019, 2020, 2021, 2022, 2023. He only combined for 21 innings at the position.
I'm telling you, yeah.
He also played third base. He's played 30 and a third innings at third, and then he's played 136 at first. So, you know, Red Sox could really DFA IKF and just bring back Christian Vasquez. He could play short.
He didn't sign anywhere, did he? He's still out there?
No, the Astros still are looking out there. That's what the rumor is.
You better add him quick. I mean, pitchers and catchers, like you work. This is when you need your catchers there.
We got Jason Delay in camp, buddy.
We do have Jason Delay.
The big Delay.
Should I read the Bregman quotes from Werner?
Sure.
All right. This is what he said about Bregman. He said, I was disappointed at the time because I think he's an elite player, but I also understood his decision. There are a lot of factors, obviously, that went into it. I don't think it was simply about the fact he was offered a bit more money in Chicago. I think he's happy to be in Arizona for spring training where his family is. I have enormous respect for Alex, but it wasn't meant to be, and we moved on. Then this was about the no trade clause thing. He said, quote, I think people have made too much of that. I don't think that was the dispositive issue. Dispositive was a new word for me, I will admit. And according to Tom Werner, the Sox don't have a blanket policy against no trade clauses. Quote, we don't. There's nothing more I can say. Is there anything wrong with anything I said there?
I think he undersold the no trade clause thing. But that's
so. Do you think he's not lying, but stretching the truth?
He's twisting it. Yeah, I think that the... I mean, I don't know. It's kind of a nothing burger quote, to be honest. I don't really have much emotion towards it. Yeah, kind of a nothing.
Yeah, I mean, I think you got a little bit of what people wanted to hear from Sam, which is that I think a lot went into it, and we respect the guy a ton, and you know, we wish him well. Like, we were disappointed.
When it comes to Bregman, it's not the same as Devers, where I think there's blame on both sides. I think it's 100% the Red Sox fault. That Bregman's no longer with the team. So there's really nothing realistically that they could say where I'd give them the thumbs up. The only thing that they could say, and they would never do this, is, hey, we screwed up. We should have been more aggressive and decisive like old Brez said we'd be. And it's not going to happen. So on that topic, on stuff that they, you know, completely messed up, I'm well aware I'm never going to hear them admit their mistakes, so just whatever. I guess a nothing burger is fine.
Yeah, it's like there's nothing that he can say to... Like, Sam tried that. Sam tried to say something to make you feel better about the Red Sox. Oh, Bregman didn't want to be here. So, okay, now I understand. Like, no, that doesn't
work. They can't admit it? They can't admit it. They can't admit when they make an error because there's an easy fix for all the errors, and it's just spending more money and being more aggressive. And they know that. And the media knows that too. So if they admit they messed up, the follow-up question would be like, why did you not spend more? Why were you not more aggressive? Why did you not offer the no trade clause? because there's an obvious reason. There's an obvious reason that they messed up. So that's part of why we're never going to hear them straight up admit it. They'd get absolutely dunked on.
Well, the remedy is also just winning games. Like, people, like the Devers thing was not a story in the second half of the season, really. It became a much big, it was a huge story when it happened, but they were winning games. So as long as they were winning games, like, we didn't have complaints. But then you get to the offseason, it's like, okay, well, this team needs a power bat and they need to spend the money. Now we're back on it. Pat?
I'm going to push back a little bit. It was a big thing when it happened. It was not a big thing when they were winning. It became a big thing again when Roman got hurt going into playoffs.
Yeah,
that's when it kind of crept back up.
Yes, I agree there. But at the same time, it's also like this team is in the playoffs. Like anything can happen. It got talked about, but it wasn't like fans were like pitchforks in the street talking about Rafi Devers the day of the Yankee series.
No, but it was people freaking out when Roman went down. And it was, but imagine if we had Rafi. Like, that was kind of the counterpoint, was like, this lineup would be fine if they still had Rafi. That's when it kind of crept back up. But yeah, to your point, like, once Bregman opted out, it became a thing. Once Bregman left, it became a really big thing. Once all of their ads had zero power, it just absolutely blew up again.
That's the thing, is it's when Alex Bregman left, like, it was definitely a thing. It was like always on the back burner of every conversation you have about the Red Sox in the offseason until they sign another major contract. When Alex Bregman left, it's like you ruined your relationship with Devers over 1 year of Alex Bregman. Like, that's what brought it back to the frontest of all burners.
Can you imagine if the Red Sox top three was Roman Anthony, Alex Bregman, Rafael Devers?
I think about that all the time.
Me too.
When Rob asked me about, and we talked a little bit about it on the pod a couple days ago, about are the Red Sox better now than they were 365 days ago, aka with both those guys on the team? And I think to myself, man, like we really went into a season thinking like 2-3-4 was Bregman, Devers, Casas, and we had Roman Anthony sitting in the minor leagues ready to go. Like, could you imagine if there wasn't any bullshit? And those two guys stayed. Casas didn't get hurt and had the year we all saw coming. Roman comes up and does what he did. Oh my God!
It not that crazy. Could have happened. It could have happened if the Red Sox ownership group acted like a good but not great ownership group. All they had to do was be normal, and all those guys would be here. If the Red Sox front office was a normal front office, we would have Roman Anthony, Rafael Devers, Alex Bregman, all these guys in the same lineup on opening day, and we'd be talking about how they're going to win 95 games, top team in the American League. We feel great about them getting to the World Series, facing the Dodgers, and who knows what happens once you get there. And yet, we're here talking about speed and defense and what went wrong with the Devers situation and this and that. We shouldn't have to talk about it, but yet, here we are again. It's like the same Groundhog Day over and over again because these guys cannot just be normal.
How many games do you think Roman and Rafael Devers played together?
Like 10.
This is a trivia question. This is something that we're going to talk about like 10 years down the line when we're going to be like, wait, those two overlapped? I'm going to say nine. Maybe less. I'm going to say seven because I remember Willie was a minimum IL stint and him coming back. Like, they were talking about, oh, is Roman going to get sent down? Like, what's going to happen? And then they traded Devers, and it wasn't a conversation anymore.
How many?
Six.
Oh, so close.
But guess how many games Rafael Devers, Roman Anthony, and Alex Bregman played together?
Zero.
We never even got to see it.
It's like a miniature version of the Durant, Kyrie, Harden, Nets, where, like, those guys were together for all the – those guys were together for way longer. They also played more games together, but like, it is a what if. It's like, wow, if we had this pitching staff, and I know you wouldn't have Rangers, you wouldn't have paid Ranger Suarez if you had Devers and Bregman under contract, but like,
I'll take Devers and Bregman.
Yeah, oh yeah, of course. Like, you can't have the conversation of if we had this pitching staff with that lineup.
Yeah. But
like, if you had that lineup with Crochet,
if you have that lineup with Sonny Gray as your number two, I'm penciling the Red Sox in for like 96 wins. Easy.
dude, I mean, that they could have been there. Like, that's the frustrating thing. And, like, that's part of the reason why it's so hard. And I've probably said this 100 times on and off air at this point, but it's so hard to have conversations about where this team is because it's so frustrating because they've messed so many things up that it's so easy to be negative. But at the end of the day, I still think this is a playoff team. So it's like weird to balance the negativity of, oh my God, they've messed so many things up. But also I'm positive going into the season thinking they're going to be a playoff team. And considering what we've been through the last 5-6 years, that's not so bad.
You know what this team feels like? This team and this offseason feels like one big consolation prize. It's not what you wanted, but it's still good. But you're still kind of thinking of, oh, what if we got the big thing? What if we got the real prize? The Bregman and Pete Alonso and the number two starter. That's the real prize. But you got two kind of fringe number two starters, Wilson Contreras and Caleb Durbin. It's good. It's just not what you wanted.
When you factor in the loss, yeah, I guess. It's so hard to think about it level-headedly with the expectation and what you got. Like, you can have the conversation, are they better than they were in September, like the very beginning of September when Roman was healthy and you didn't know that Bayo and Giolito were going to get hurt / fall off a cliff. Like, you can make the argument that, like, it is debatable. Are they better now versus then?
It shouldn't be a debate. We should not have to be having the debate, are they better in 2026 compared to the 2025 team? It should be how much better. And it was a layup from the jump. There were so many different avenues that we've all laid out, and they weren't crazy avenues. It's not like we were coming up with crazy shit. Very logical, straightforward paths that not just us, a lot of people laid out. And they took this weird, windy road to good but not great.
So I just kind of mapped it out. Let's say there was a day they went full offense, meaning they sat like Sadon Rafael last year. The top
seven
of that lineup would have been Roman, Duran, Bregman, Devers, Casas, Story, Willier Abreu. Willier Abreu would be the seventh hitter in a healthy lineup.
It's probably three or four for you this year.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcast.
That's amazing. Like, that's the lineup that was a layup from the beginning of last year, and so many things have been bungled, and now we're at the point where it's like, who is hitting second for this team? I mean, it's got to be Trevor Story, right? Unless Cora changes his mind and it's Wilson Contreras and it's Story's cleanup. Like, that's the conversation we're having.
Yeah,
it should be Contreras hitting second. I like that.
I prefer that too, actually.
Give me the
thumb. To get nitpicky, but yeah.
Yeah, like Roman, Contreras, Willier, like that's a solid top three, but that's not what we expected or should have had. I don't like when people say should, because then my response is like, well, why didn't it happen? But in this instance, the Red Sox should have had a much better top three than that. So, and I hate, you know, I really like Willier. Spoiler, that's my breakout pick for this year. And I think Contreras is a good bat. And we all feel the same about Roman Anthony. He's going to be great. It's just not. It's not the Boston Red Sox. It's frustrating. And Gordo, I'm feeling what you said, because I do think they're going to be good, but it's so hard to be exclusively positive when it could have just been better.
They have a bunch of, like, they have a few guys who I would be really happy with as five hitters, and they don't have anyone who I would be thrilled about as a number two hitter, unless it's Roman, and then I'll say the same thing about leadoff.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be Durbin, right, if it's not Roman?
Yeah, like basically, yeah. You're missing one legitimate top of the lineup, like star caliber bat. You just are, and maybe someone breaks through and like you find that internally, but it's not something you can count on. And I just unless something changes with the Diamondbacks and like Ketel Marte wants out and wants to come to the Red Sox because he's going to get those 10-5 rights. But even then, it's like that road is complicated because now you've traded for Caleb Durbin, who deserves to play every day. So who's leaving the everyday infield if you do make a move like that?
You know what's interesting in kind of a sad way? Last year, a lot of us were complaining about guys being asked to do things that they hadn't done before, like Crochet pitch a full season, Christian Campbell play second base, this, and that, Devers go DH. And now we feel better about the position players. We had this conversation a few episodes ago. We like the defensive alignment. We feel like guys are in good spots. But now the issue, it's the same thing, but it's the lineup. You have Roman Anthony, who's a kid. You got to be the catalyst for this lineup. You got to be the best hitter. Wilson Contreras, I wouldn't even describe him as a power hitter. You're a good hitter, but we need you to try to hit 30 home runs because this team lacks power. And then maybe the craziest one of all, Willier Abreu, we need you to hit third or fourth for most of the season, if not all of the season. It's the
Tim,
same
you don't,
thing.
You don't think it's going to be Duran hitting third?
At third or fourth. It's probably going to be, I think it's going to be Roman, a right-handed bat, Contreras, or Story, then probably either Willier or Duran third.
Interesting.
Yeah. I think it'll be Duran third, Story or Contreras fourth, and then Willie fifth.
Right. But against a lefty? Against a lefty.
Well, not against a lefty. No. Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe Willier will be like, I don't know, but do you want.
I guess the lefty, you're uprooting the whole thing.
Because
yeah,
what the fuck do you even do against a lefty?
I think the way it shakes out right now, it would be Roman, Story, Duran, Contreras, Abreu. I think that's how the top five shakes out.
Roman.
Yes.
Story, Duran, yeah. Contreras, Abreu. But then the other thing, too, is pending health, the whole lefty conundrum, you're going to hit Romy pretty high. Romy will be in there.
Mm-hmm.
Contreras. You should lead off versus lefties. Probably have Romy hit first.
I would probably go Romy, Roman, Story, Contreras. Fifth is when it gets a little bit hairy. You could go Narvaez. Eaton's going to play a lot against lefties. I don't love him in the five hole.
Dude, they let Eaton off a bunch last year. Like, you never know. They may pull that thing out. Like, I wouldn't lead Eaton.
They don't have a left. Who's the best lefty masher? Would it be Contreras now?
It's Romy.
It's Romy.
Aside from Romy, sorry. I'm talking about middle
probably
of the order.
Eaton?
Contreras and Story are probably your two most trusted right-handed bats.
I feel like Sogard was good against lefties, but not enough to hit, top
four. He may not even be in the majors.
Yeah.
Never mind. Wilson Contreras kills lefties. 863 OPS against them last year compared to 767 against righties.
Okay.
So
yeah.
There you go. There's your big bat.
Okay. I'll give you my – I would do Romy, Roman, Contreras, Story.
Romy, Roman, Contreras, Story. Yeah. Okay.
Or Story,
me too.
Contreras. Like, I don't care. Whatever.
Me too.
And then you can you've done three righties in the first four, and then you can.
Is Duran a platoon guy now?
Should be.
Maybe.
Where's
Nate Eaton getting in the? I don't think Nate Eaton is a strict against every lefty guy.
No, he's not even that good against lefties.
Well,
right?
This is where Campbell comes in. Like, if Campbell can hit.
Even think he's not going to be in the majors unless he's playing every day, though.
Yeah, true.
No, yeah. Eaton has reverse splits.
That's crazy.
Why'd you let Ref Snyder go?
for the
what
money
about
they
IKF?
Paid IKF. Yeah.
Hey, jokes aside, another reverse splits guy.
I mean, to be honest with you, I feel like they let Ref Snyder go to open the door for Willie to play more, and I respect it, but also, like, you're making this bet. Willie's going to need to be able to hit some lefties this year. And I'm not talking about hold his own. I'm talking about, like, we're going to actually need to see some damage. Because I don't know about you guys. I don't trust Duran against lefties after seeing what we saw last year.
No. Did you see his quote from the other day? I mean, he was like, someone asked him about hitting off of left-handed pitching. And he said, well, I did pretty good in 2024, so I just got to adjust. And I saw that quote. I'm like, did he do well in 2024? He wasn't that good against lefties in 2024. He was just really good against righties. So, yeah, he might be a platoon guy, which is discouraging.
One encouraging thing, if you want to call it that, is Caleb Durbin is about as even gets in terms of splits. 722 OPS against righties, 717 OPS against lefties.
Okay, hold on. Back up a second.
Yeah. Jim,
the Duran splits, you're right. He had a 665 OPS against lefties in 24. Right. I believe it was 600 on the dot in 25. I'll check it now, but I'm pretty sure on the dot. So, yeah.
It's not good.
Yeah, 600 on the dot. So yeah, obviously it was better in 24. Still not good, but it's like that. This is
that's pretty well below league average. Like what did you say it was in 24?
665. This is why you had to. This is why I get so annoyed. It's like we keep kicking this outfield situation can down the road, and I understand. Like if you're getting shit offers for the guy, you can't trade the guy. But like this is what's frustrating is because are we about to make Jarren Duran a platoon DH? Or are we going to play him every day at DH and let him get eaten alive by lefties? Or are we going to put him in the outfield even though our best outfield alignment doesn't have him in it? Like, it's so awkward keeping him around when it's like, damn, man, you could trade him for the best value you can get, and Massa's your DH, and he can hit.
Williers.
He can't hit lefties, though.
No. Williers splits. Small sample size, obviously. Last year against lefties. Not pretty. Williers
against
lefties.
But better than before, right? You give me 25, I'll give you 24.
Okay, so 20-25 against lefties. He only had 60 at-bats. What did he have in 24?
I'm still pulling it up. Okay. Give me those.
So his OPS against lefties was 676. He hit one of his 22 home runs off of lefties.
Oh, you expand that out over an entire season. It might be two.
Pat, what were his OPSs against right and against left? In 25?
Against righties was 808.
Very good.
Against lefties was 676.
Okay. The year before it was 825 against righties, 532 against lefties. Okay. He only had 67 plate appearances. One of his 15 home runs was against lefties, but he had 380 plate appearances against righties, 67 against lefties.
Yeah, so about the same. Okay.
He looked more comfortable. And regarding the power, Pat, and this is like we'll get a chance to look at him. I'm sure he'll get to face a bunch of lefties in spring training. Well, granted, he's going to be in the WBC, so we'll see. But it looked like he was just focused on making contact against lefties. Like, we're not trying to do damage. We're trying to pass the baton against lefties.
He did look a lot more complete as a hitter. Like, you could tell he had an approach when he was up there, whether it was lefties versus righties. It did feel like in the small sample size that he had seen the lefties in the past, like he was kind of like Duran in the playoffs. Like, there was just no game plan. It was kind of praying for contact. You could tell there was a shift. There was a shift strategically where he had a game plan for the lefties that he did face.
Yeah, and he hit 230 off them last year, and he hit 180 off them the year before. So the batting average was up 50 points. Batting average wise aside, batting average wise alone, last year was 250 against righties, 230 against lefties. So it's not that dramatic, but it's obviously he's doing way more damage against righties because, I mean, come on.
By the way, Trevor Story also, he's kind of neutral splits, slightly better against righties than lefties. So I don't know what this team is going to do against left-handed pitching. And it was nice because you had Bregman and Ref Snyder last year. And, you know, Devers is fine against lefties, better against righties. So you feel like that issue that had plagued them for multiple seasons was finally amended. But it feels like it's going to come back.
Last thing on guys who hit lefties. I'll always bring this up when I get the chance. Do you guys want to hear Tyler O'Neill's 2024 with the Red Sox against lefties? Oh, my God.
What?
He against lefties with the Red Sox, he hit 313 with an 1179 OPS. He had 16 home runs in 75 games.
Very nice. Very nice.
That's absurd. That's crazy.
Oh, here we go. Carlos Narvaez, slightly better against lefties.
You know who's...
Well, they're not gonna be the disaster team against... Sorry, Pat, you glitched. You go ahead.
I was going to say, the worst guy on the team to have reverse splits has reverse splits. Seydon Rafaela hit 220 off of lefties with a 679 OPS.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, weird. They might have they might be really bad against lefties this year. The more we talk about this, who do you feel good about other than Romy?
Romy's not even healthy.
Yeah.
True. That's it. We'll probably get into that more because, like, it's starting to sound a little bleak there. Like, he's not even doing baseball activities, and they're like waiting for some shot to hopefully take effect or something, and it hasn't. And that's a little.
Oh, Monasterio, 837 OPS against lefties.
Ooh,
there it is. There's our guy. There's the savior.
The thing is, I got excited about that when the Sox got him, and then I saw some Brewers fans tweeting about him. It's like, no, don't let that fool you. Like,
nope.
So I'm waiting to see on
it's fooling me. He's gonna hit third.
Hell yeah. Honestly, hey. Dude, it would – we have one of these guys on the Red Sox every single year that just, like, out of nowhere, like, this random dude. Like, the Pedro Siriacos and, like – why am I forgetting the – God. Come on, help me. Hit the walk-off grand slam off the foul pole. What? Come on, help me out here.
Pablo Reyes.
Pablo Reyes. Like, guys like that like, randomly have, like, big impacts on a team, like – he could be this year's version of that.
You want to know who the worst player on the team against lefties was last year?
It's Masa Yoshida for sure.
No.
Really?
It was Marcelo.
Dude, he had like a 400 OPS.
But he got like 10 at-bats.
Yeah, so he had 26 at-bats. He struck out in 10 of 26 at-bats. He hit 154, good for a 416 OPS.
Yeah, and it didn't look good in the minors either.
But he had a 740 OPS against righties, hit 250. Not bad.
I think this team is gonna do really well against righties. I don't know about lefties. They face Andrew Abbott, what, game two of the season this year? They might get Abbott and Lodolo in the second and third games of the season. After facing Hunter Green in the first.
Probably will. Jeez. But at the same time, it's like the Reds are getting Crochet, Ranger Suarez, and Sonny Gray. But
we're just talking about how the Red Sox can't hit lefties, or we're worried about them not hitting lefties. And you get two really good ones right out of the gate.
Ugh. Well, they don't. The thing is, Sammy, I don't see a ton of like star, this guy's going to destroy righties on the team either. Like they have Roman.
No, they have a bunch of guys who you feel like are good against righties. It's just the lefty thing. The more we talk about it, the worse I feel.
I kind of feel the same though, because it's like we just brought up a few guys, like no one's killing them or anything, but like you've got half a lineup, two-thirds of a lineup worth of guys that can hold their own against lefties, and it's kind of the same against righties. Like they've got about a third of the lineup that's not really going to be doing a whole lot for you offensively either which way.
Okay, who do you feel good about against lefties? Like not great, but just good. Roman.
Even though he's a lefty, I feel good about him.
Yeah, Contreras.
Yep.
Narvaez.
Durbin. Fine. I would throw Durbin. He can hold his own.
No, I don't think any of these guys, other than Romy Gonzalez, had 800 OPSs or higher.
You said Contreras did.
Contreras did. You're right. So there's two guys. Whereas against righties.
What did Roman have? He may not have.
I think he was like high 700s against lefties. I don't think he was in the 800s.
Insane as a rookie.
You might, I think you're right, Sammy. I think I'm going to check it.
Either way, you can feel Romano by
mistake.
Same thing.
Oh, 770, close-ish.
Yeah.
I mean, that's good. If Roman Anthony has a 770 OPS against lefties in 2026, I will not complain one bit.
You guys also got to remember, how long did it take him to get going? About
like 21 at-bats.
No, it was longer. I thought it was like...
He didn't get going until Seattle.
I'm gonna pull up his game logs and then we'll go to Nuff Said.
He was striking out quite a bit in the early going.
He started like 2 for 21 or something crazy.
Remember that first hit? That first hit was so cool. It was like a foot outside and he poked it into left field.
Oh. Yeah,
that was beautiful. Sammy, I know you're referencing the home run in Seattle. He didn't really get going until they came back home and played Toronto after that West Coast series.
Mm.
So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 15 or, yeah, 15, 16 games where he wasn't very good. Let me see if Baseball Reference is going to load for me. Yeah, here we go. His first 16 games, he hit 128 with a 548 OPS.
Let's
see what he did after that. Come on, BREF, load for me. We got to get to Nuff Said. All right, here you go. You ready? After that, in 55 games, he hit 329 with a 930 OPS.
That's pretty good. Pretty good. By the way, just so you don't have buyer or not buyer's remorse, Gino Suarez, Gordo, your guy, not good against lefties, 714 OPS. 865 against righties, though, so he's reverse. I think a lot of those big home run strikeout guys are reverse splits because they see the righty more, so they make more contact. Yeah,
Schwarber
and O'Neill.
Schwarber is a reverse. Doesn't he hit lefties better? Or am I completely making that up?
Schwarber crushes lefties. I forget what's better.
That's what I thought. Yeah,
Tyler O'Neill is a home run guy that destroys lefties, not as much righties.
Yeah, he's a traditional splits guy. Let me pull up Schwarbs real quick. I like looking at splits. This is a fun exercise. Wow, he is over 900 against both.
Good.
964 against lefties, 904 against righties. Maybe
he's good.
Holy shit.
Dude, that's crazy.
Oh my God. Thank God the Red Sox didn't even make an effort to sign him.
Or keep him when they had him.
Yeah. Yeah. We hate good players here.
Dude, he had a 964 OPS against lefties this year and 230 at bats as a lefty.
Not a small sample. That's crazy. Yep.
All right.
Actually, this is a good season. He hit 23 home runs against lefties alone.
He was good.
We don't know if anyone on the Red Sox is going to hit that many home runs at all.
Oh, all right. God. We got to do enough said. We're running long. Sammy, you want to go first here?
Yep. Yeah. How do I frame this? The Red Sox did like their photo shoot, whatever, today on Tuesday. And we all know the issue with Fanatics. 2 years ago, they had the like see-through pants, saw everybody's jock strap. And then the year after, no, that was the same year. Same year, they had the tiny, tiny little letters for the nameplates on the back of the jerseys. And I'm a big aesthetics guy in sports. That's why I'm not a big City Connect fan all the time. Like, it has to be a good City Connect. And so today, when the Red Sox did their photo shoot, the font on the front of the jersey, it overlaps with the piping on the chest ever so slightly. And I saw one person point it out, then I saw another person, and then I saw hundreds of people pointing it out by the end of the day. I can't not notice it, and that will bother me every single game all year long, and I can't do it. This is probably my biggest complaint all offseason is the jerseys.
I've been trying to develop a take on it because, like, just being honest with myself, like, if it hadn't been pointed out, I would have noticed it in photos. I don't think I would have noticed it watching the games either on TV or in person. So it's like, if I'm not going to know, like, with the nameplates, that's something, like, you notice every time you see it.
That was worse.
This, it's like, I want to, like, not be that annoyed about it, but I'm going to be anyway because it's like the easiest thing to just not mess up.
Right.
Like,
why? That's my saving grace though, Gordo. There's a chance that I see it on TV and I go, oh, okay, it's not that noticeable. But I know how my messed up brain works. I feel like I'm going to absolutely notice it, and I'll notice it every time it's on the screen, and it's gonna just irk me ever so slightly every single time, and that'll build up, and by the end of the season I will be livid. Per usual.
The color was off too. Did you notice that? The lighting, the B, like the letters were a slightly lighter color than the piping too. It's a little weird.
Yeah, I talked myself into that just being the camera or something.
It could also be on purpose. I don't know.
They have two different shades of red on the jersey this year on top of the messed up piping underneath the lettering. I don't know if I'm going to be able to take it.
I'll give you one. It could be that they overlapped, they made the call, we're overlapping it on the piping, and it's like, oh, wait a minute, it's the same color, it doesn't look good. We have to change the color of one of them. It's all planned, it's all on purpose.
Or the Red Sox have really nice classic home uniforms and just don't fucking touch them. Just leave them as is. That's fine. That's okay. The Yankees do it. I hate the Yankees, but I love what they do with the uniforms, which is nothing. Just leave them as is. That's not me saying I don't like the Red Sox like alt jerseys. Red Sox actually do a good job with that, other than the yellow shit one that I hate. I like the Friday red uniforms or the Friday greens. I think those look good. So, but don't.
What about road reds though? Road reds never.
No,
I never got used to that. Road never liked it.
Reds, no nameplate. All they had to do was add a nameplate because they don't wear those at home anymore. If you add a nameplate to the road reds, I like them. I just don't like no name on the back when you're on the road. That's a home team thing. The home crowd knows who the players are by their number. They don't need the last name. It's not the same on the road. I think, yeah. Don't get me started with this stuff. This irks me so much.
I miss the Friday navies.
On the road?
I like those too. I think they got a lot of hate But I think now that they're gone, I think people will realize, and maybe it's because they won the World Series in them. But
I was going to say, I like the Bruins' old white road jerseys because it just reminds me of when they beat Vancouver.
Yeah.
It's nostalgia. Same with the Blues for the Red Sox.
Pat, you got enough said?
I do. I think that it is going criminally under the radar just how weird AJ Preller and the Padres have been over the last 10 days. Are you guys aware of all the guys that they have signed in the last 10 days? In the last 10 days, they have signed Miguel Andujar, Ty France, Nick Castellanos, Germán Márquez, Walker Buehler, and Griffin Canning. What are they building in there? What is going on in San Diego?
So they got Griffin Canning, a gold glover, Walker Buehler, an all-star.
World Series champion. Germán Márquez, all-star.
All-star.
Nick Castellanos, multi-time all-star. Ty France, all-star.
And gold glover as well.
And I believe Miguel Andujar was a top three AL Rookie of the Year finisher.
So what are you questioning, Pat? Sounds like an all-star team they're building over there.
I agree. Now that we've said this out loud.
They're taking down the Dodgers, is what you're saying.
Pat's finally learning.
Miguel Andujar finished second in Rookie of the Year in 2018.
Why are you bringing this up? It's shrewd business.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, they're beefing up the defense. They're beefing up the defense with a gold glove first baseman and a gold glove pitcher.
You know, it's on the rest of the league for letting a stud like Walker Buehler sit on the market for so long.
You love Walker Buehler, Gordo. He's your favorite player.
Definitely, yeah. Love that guy.
What if I told you that Miguel Andujar got 5 first place votes for Rookie of the Year. He hit .297. He had an .855 OPS, 27 home runs, 92 RBI.
He was awesome. I thought he was going to be like a star for years to come. We are lucky that
he was really good last year too. All right, go ahead, Pat.
Again, he got 5 first place votes. He stole 5 first place votes from Shohei Ohtani.
Ha! Didn't Shohei start slow? Like when he first got to the big leagues, didn't he start slow?
Dude, Shohei.
Who cares? Shohei, he pitched and hit.
Shohei worst. 22 home runs, 61 RBI, 10 bags, hit .285, 925 OPS. He also had a .331 ERA in 10 starts.
Yeah, that was who the hell voted for?
That's my point.
That's my worst sports take in my life. Is I thought that Shohei wasn't going to be good because nobody's done it since Babe Ruth. And this guy's coming over from a different league. You think he's going to pitch and hit?
Better than Babe Ruth.
Yeah, just a bit.
All right, my enough said before we get out of here. I was today years old when I learned that Zach Kelly has never had a baseball card. Tops produced or any of the major companies. I was shocked. He wrote it on his... Like they always take the picture day with a piece of paper with their name on it, and he wrote on his piece of paper like, "Please, can I have a baseball card?" He has pitched in 4 major league seasons now. This is going to be his 5th year pitching in the major leagues, and he's never had a baseball card. Like how? I thought everyone who played in the majors got a baseball card.
What's funny is he's never had a card. I have a numbered. I pulled this. I swear to God. I think I forgot to tell you guys this. I pulled a numbered, autographed Chris Murphy card. But Zach Kelly does not have a card.
So what? How does that happen then?
No idea.
Wait. Yeah. So I was about to say, if you have a base set, it's only a couple hundred cards. And you got 40-man rosters for each team. So a lot of guys who are not on the big league team all year are going to miss out. But
Pat, did you tell Murphy you pulled that?
No, I pulled it after he left.
Oh, you should tell him. Come on.
Probably should.
He's not on the team anymore. It doesn't mean he's out of our lives forever.
Might shoot him a text if he wants it.
He could sign it. He could sign it.
We got to find out when Murph comes back to Fenway.
The White Sox are in town. No, I don't know.
Let me see.
I don't know.
They are in town. Oh, damn. Oh, my God. It's a while. It's a while before they play the White Sox, period.
Okay, well, then we'll have that to look forward to. We'll be like, okay, like, they got the White Sox.
The White Sox until August 4th.
Cancel the season.
Oh, this will be good. They'll have the trade deadline where they'll acquire all these great players, and then the White Sox will roll into town, and we'll beat their bolts off.
We can see Murakami get his 250th strikeout in person.
And his sick belt.
I thought you were going to say 250th home run. Could do it. Yeah. In one season.
He could. He could, technically, true. He'll get more than 250 at-bats, therefore it's technically possible. So that's ball talk.
All right, fellas. You good to wrap?
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. That's going to do it. Episode 322. Play Tessie. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Rate 5 stars. Find us on the socials at Play Tessie on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. For Sammy, for Pat, for Joe producing, it is Gordo here for Play Tessie. Episode 322. We'll be back on Friday. Thanks for tuning in. Peace.
Hey, y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one. So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast.
Reality Gaze, let's love.